Chapter 17. Thus began Mr. Nuki's Wild Ride, also known as Mr. Nuki's Big Adventure. Regardless of the title, the story would not make for a particularly good children's book because of the extreme violence. It was the greatest day of Mr. Nuki's rather uneventful life. He had begun life inside a reactor at Savannah River, then spent uneventful years sitting in bunkers, then having his plutonium put through a life cycle extension program, and finally, he and 11 of his siblings had been launched into space. Into space? Not just into space. He had been taken aboard a starship, a stolen alien pirate starship. How exciting was that? Answer? Not. Most of the time, Nuki rested quietly in a cargo bay, doing absolutely nothing except emitting radioactive decay particles on a regular schedule. Occasionally, a person visited to check on him, but otherwise, life was dull, dull, dull. Several times, Nuki got off the ship to travel with Colonel Bishop, which should have been exciting, but the travel only meant he was strapped into a seat in a dropship cabin, instead of being strapped into a cradle in a cargo bay. He rested in the seat, doing nothing, while Bishop talked about boring stuff or played games on his tablet, or did other things that were absolutely of no interest to a nuclear warhead. Eventually, the mission ended, and he was returned to the cargo bay. "What happened? What did you do?" the other nuclear weapons asked eagerly, and Mr. Nuki was casually bored when he replied. "Oh, you know," he said, "nothing much," which only made the other nukes insanely jealous because they were sure Nuki had gotten into a whole lot of exciting shenanigans and that big jerk refused to tell them the juicy details. The only pleasure Nuki got out of his travel experiences was silently chuckling to himself as his fellow devices seethed with jealousy at him. Every time a nuke was needed off the ship, it was Nuki the crew chose, and the others burned with curiosity to know where he was going, and why he was so damn special. Why didn't the others get to share the fun? Nuki hinted that he was special, and no amount of begging and threats could make him reveal why the others were considered unworthy to join away missions. Nuki never bothered to point out that his position on top of the cradle nearest the door meant he was simply in the most convenient location when a nuke was needed away from the ship. Listening to his fellow weapons grumble and whine never got old, but everything else did. Life was going to be dull, 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 until the day the Flying Dutchman returned to Earth for the last time, and Nuki was brought back down to the surface to be recycled in another life cycle extension program, or worse, be permanently disassembled. So when a bot removed Nuki from the cradle again, he did not get his hopes up. It would be another boring, uneventful away mission in a stupid dropship, listening to stupid humans talk blah 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 about their stupid problems. His stupid life sucked. When the bot carrying him continued forward past the last docking bay and turned right to hustle down a narrow passageway, Nuki perked up, wondering what was going on. When that bot worked with three others to load him into the nose cone of an obsolete Theranan missile recovered from a floating junkyard in the Roach Motel, Nuki got so excited he gave off an extra neutron. Launch was definitely exciting, and Nuki's only regret was that the crushing acceleration of the missile meant he had little time for sightseeing, and not even time to post to his Instapinter Twitface account. Apparently his target was a gray and rather uninteresting-looking moon, although a glance up and behind showed a planet with angry orange clouds and an impressive amount of rocky debris in orbit. And beyond orbit, some of those rocks would crash into the moon, causing significant havoc. "Ha!" Nuki laughed. "It would take a truly big freaking rock to rival the damage he was about to create." He was a variable yield device, and he was cranked up to maximum destructive force. The dusty gray surface rushed up at him, and the missile's nose cone split and discarded. Smythe saw the glow first, a searingly bright flash that lit up the mountain ridge to the east of the moon base. The flash was followed by a mushroom cloud, though the cloud was thinner and dispersed more quickly than in videos he had seen of nuclear test airbursts. The lack of an atmosphere must explain the lack of a classic mushroom cloud, he mused to himself. "Colonel," Frey tapped the artificial diamond of the viewport. "What does this mean?" There had not been time to fully inform the team before the detonation, so Smythe had focused on assuring no one was in a situation that might be hazardous if the nuclear explosion caused a moonquake that shook the base. It means, he allowed his faceplate to go clear again now that the high-energy particles and photons had passed by, that our commander is a daft bastard sometimes. He is, I must say, also very inventive. I would not have considered using nuclear warheads to dig a hole. The bridge display wasn't showing me any information I could make sense of, so I did the easy thing and asked the beer can. Did it work? Define work, Joe. Oh, shit. The tone of your voice is not filling me with confidence. What went wrong? Well, I am... Hey, this is your fault. You are no patience man, so I figured you wanted everything done super-duper fast. What the hell did you do this time? No, wait. There is no point trying to assign blame, especially because we know that as the commander, you are responsible for everything that goes on around here, which means, hey, cool, I just had a thought. I can do any shit I want around here, and it will be all your fault. Wow, that makes things easy on me. Maybe I should try some really stupid stuff. That was super helpful, thank you, Skippy. The nuke. You remember that, right? What happened? What nuke? Oh, yeah. I thought more than one device would be needed, and what I should have done is use a low yield first to get a better reading on the composition and density of the regolith covering the tunnel entrance. But because you would have bitched about me taking too much time, I dialed up the yield on the first device to the max, and, it was a little more effective than I expected. It was like that nuke was over-eager or something. Okay, I didn't mean to make you rush. Honest mistake. You did it to get the job done quickly, so we can get out of here before the Bosphorok fleet spoils the party. Right, right, and only a little bit because blowing shit up is cool. I never used a nuke before, that I know of. Anywho, we're good. No harm done. There was no substantial damage to the cavern or the tunnel. However, we can't use another nuke, not even at minimum yield. I suggest we use a conventional ship-killer missile, followed by one or two standard missiles, then we use the maser cannon for precision work. Will any of this delay the op? No, Joe, that is the good news. You can get going now instead of having to wait for debris from a second nuke to clear away from the area. That will actually accelerate the timetable by 3 or 4 minutes. Great. Every second counts. Sims, I shouted toward the CIC. You have the con. I'm going on a road trip with the beer can. Skippy was, of course, correct. The lack of atmosphere meant the blast debris from Mr. Nuki followed a nice, predictable ballistic pattern without turbulent air rushing in to fill the vacuum created by the explosion. The moon's low gravity, however, meant the debris went high and wide, with chunks flying far enough to impact the moon base, which is why Smythe's team had to remain there, protected by the energy shield and the 100 meters of rock and moon dirt over their heads. The low gravity created a problem for us, because what goes up must come down, and the power of the nuke had propelled the up really high. The material shot upward took an extra long time to slow down and fall back, unless it reached escape velocity like 24% of the ejected mass did. If we had used a second nuke, Skippy thought we would be forced to wait 38 minutes before it would be safe to fly down in a dropship. Because the ship killer and lower-powered missiles we used for follow-up work had shaped charge warheads, the force of those explosions was focused downward and threw the debris mostly sideways. By the time the missiles were done and the Dutchman's main maser cannons began burning through the last layer of dirt covering the tunnel entrance, we were approaching in a Falcon dropship. With Reed and Beza in a Falcon safely tucked away in a hangar under the moon base, and Porter piloting the Dutchman along with Edwards and two relief pilots, the job of flying the Falcon with me had fallen to Lieutenant Daniel Pope. The co-pilot seat was occupied by some unqualified amateur whose name rhymed with Schmo Dipshit, which showed how desperately thin our pilot roster was on our unauthorized renegade mission. Pope might have been wondering if he should have followed most of his Delta Force team down to Barbados, but he tactfully kept his mouth shut. Joe, hold here. Skippy's can glowed orange from where he was strapped in between the pilot couches. There are some chunks of the moon that are still falling. Crap, we can't dawdle here all day. Gravity is one law of physics that I have a very limited ability to screw with, Joe. He sniffed in the unappreciated put-upon tone he used way too often. This is not good, Skippy. A Falcon was not just plummeting in freefall toward the moon's surface. We were in a power dive. It was unlikely but possible that a Bosphorok warship might be lurking outside the system, so I was anxious to get the job done, fly back to the ship, and jump the hell out of there ASAP. With our Falcon and Smythe's Condor on or under the moon, we would be in a bad position if an enemy warship arrived. Can you use your super-duper mathy navigation skills to thread us in between all these fallen rocks? Mathy? You know what I mean, Professor Nerdnik. Joe, sometimes... Now his can was glowing more red than orange, indicating he was annoyed with me again. You are so... Sir, Sims mercifully interrupted from the ship. Our main maser batteries are occupied and sequenced to burn a hole down to the tunnel entrance. Because we needed a continuous burn to cut through to the tunnel, the ship was firing one big maser cannon barrel for a couple seconds, then taking it offline to cool while another barrel fired. The firing sequence Nagatha programmed used all three of the main anti-ship cannon barrels, and even then, there were gaps in the firing sequence. Yes, I know you and the crew and Nagatha are doing all you can up there. I don't want to risk cracking a maser exciter. It's not that. Sims interrupted me again. In the past, she wouldn't have done that. I took it as a good sign that she was growing comfortable with command. The point defense system masers are not occupied, and we have plenty of spare power from the reactor. Skippy, can we use the PDS masers to vaporize those falling rocks so they're not a hazard?
Yes.
Hey, Joe, you should have thought of that, the beer can gloated, his can glowing blue with happiness.
Good thinking, Colonel Sims.
Maybe you should be commander of this mission. I have enough headaches already, thank you, she retorted. Sims, weapons free, I ordered. Blow up those rocks for us, please. On the big curved displays that functioned as a cockpit windshield, I saw objects above and below us flare briefly as the PDS cannons made quick work of zapping all the dangerous rocks into dust. The Dutchman was far away compared to the normal operating radius of the point defense system, but that system was designed to defend the ship against missiles moving at high speed, engaged in violent evasive maneuvers, protected by their own energy shields and ablative coatings, wrapped in stealth fields, and attempting to fool the PDS with active countermeasures. Blasting slow-moving rocks that were falling in relentlessly predictable ballistic arcs was so easy, the PDS could have done the job while it was sleeping. Nagatha did not even need to assist the PDS targeting computer. Clear, Sims reported.
Confirmed, Skippy added. Joe, you are clear to fly straight down the tunnel. The entrance is now clear.
It doesn't look clear, Skippy.
Oh, it will be clear by the time you get there, Dum-Dum. There is dust hovering over the area from rocks and dirt that got baked by the maser cannons. Those fine particles will not pose any danger to the Falcon, and the nav gear can see right through it. As long as you do not scrape the sides of the tunnel on the way in, we will be fine.
Okay, if you say so. With the unenhanced view through the windshield display, the whole target area looked like it was covered with a thick blanket of fog. Switching to the enhanced navigation view, it was indeed clear.
Let's go, I instructed Pope, and he lifted one thumb to acknowledge my order as he advanced the throttles.
Joe, there is just one danger I am concerned about, Skippy added. My reply was delayed and distracted because I was monitoring our trajectory for Pope.
What is that?
You are sitting in the co-pilot couch. Please promise me you will not touch anything.
Ha! I can't make any promises there, Skippy.
Hey, I wonder what will happen if I press this button.
No!
Flying down the tunnel was tense. Skippy tried teasing me about my poor piloting skills, and I barked at him to shut up because I needed to concentrate on providing guidance to Pope. He had enhanced synthetic vision from the display in front of him, plus we had the Falcon's sophisticated autopilot system and a super-intelligent Elder AI to warn us of any trouble ahead or behind. Still, it was very tricky flying. Without atmosphere, the Falcon's stubby wings would not provide lift, so we kept them fully retracted to give us extra clearance on each side. The tunnel was an oval shape, built for dropships larger than our Falcon, and Skippy reported the tunnel originally had a magnetic system, sort of like a railgun, that restrained, held, and guided dropships down to the cavern. Because that restraint system was offline, we had to rely on the Falcon's belly jets to keep it above the sloping floor of the tunnel and thrusters to move us along at controlled speed and course. The long, slow descent would require the belly jets to use 70% of their normal propellant supply, so we had added an extra tank to bring that number down to 60%. Propellant was not the only concern. Those jets were not designed to be used continuously, and without surrounding air to carry away the heat, the jets grew hot quickly. We were forced to use extra propellant just to bleed away part of the heat, eating deeper into our reserves. On the way back up the tunnel, we planned to go much faster, shooting out of there like a bat out of hell. To reduce weight, the Falcon's interior had been stripped of seats and anything else we did not need that could be removed without major work that would have taken too long.
Portside jet number 3 is overheating, Joe, Skippy warned. Better throttle back on that one. Doing it now? I shared a glance with Pope. The other jets would need to take up the slack, unless they overheated also. Skippy, are you able to see what is down there yet? I'm adjusting the sensors now. The Maxalts installed a sort of scrambler device in the tunnel, and it is still partially active. There is a big heavy door at the bottom of the tunnel. Well, that is no surprise, I guess. Are you opening the door? No, I would have told you that, dum-dum. Then how the f— Remembering I had a pilot I did not know well, I bit off my salty language. Pope, take us down close to the door and hover us there. Skippy, how are we supposed to get in there?
Working on it.
Got it. Okay, here's the problem. We can get the door open, but it won't stay open. The motor hasn't been maintained in a long time, and it can't take full power, or it will burn out. That door is designed to slide closed when power is out, so if the motor fails, which I expect it will, the door will slam shut on us. Crap. This is a problem I did not anticipate. This is the type of situation when earlier in my career I would have despaired, or maybe exploded with useless anger and curse words, or both. Experience had given me a better perspective. It might even have given me a bit of maturity, although Skippy would argue about that. Experience allowed me to focus on what, if anything, we could do to fix the problem. That door slides on tracks? Can we zap the tracks with the Falcon's maser cannon? Jam the door open? A good idea, Joe, except that will not work. The door was designed to function in case the tunnel suffered a partial collapse. Its mechanism is quite rugged. There are no tracks to jam. That door is also thick and heavy, so do not suggest anything stupid like using a person in a powered suit to hold it open. A Kristang-powered suit, even a Theranan combat, lacks the power to hold that door open. Crap. I am sorry, Joe. This is kind of ironic. With all the advanced technology available to us, the one thing we need is a simple doorstop. I know up in your hometown, usually a dead car battery, or maybe an old toilet or washing machine is used to hold a door open, but old toilets are for planting flowers in, Skippy. That was not a joke. On the other side of my hometown, there was a toilet in the side yard, and the lady who owned that house planted flowers in it every spring. A contractor who remodeled the house was supposed to haul it away, but he didn't, so it sat there. The same lady also stuck an old headboard at one end of a flower garden, perhaps taking the term flower bed a bit too literally. And a washing machine should be in the front yard under a tree next to the old car you plan to fix up someday. A dead battery. When I didn't finish my thought, Skippy got annoyed. What about the dead battery? We don't need a real doorstop, Skippy. We just need something really heavy, right? Would that work? If it was really heavy, yes. Then it could stop the door from sliding closed. Forget about landing this Falcon in front of the door, Joe. It is not nearly heavy enough to do the job. And besides, if the Falcon is blocking the doorway, we can't fly out a Maxalt's dropship. I don't plan to use the Falcon, Skippy. Well, if you plan to fly something heavy down from the ship, that will take way too long and we will be sitting here with— We don't need anything from the ship. We have you.
Me?
You can temporarily increase your mass footprint in local space-time, or some sciencey bullshit like that, right? I am the most powerful and intelligent being in this galaxy, and you plan to use me as a doorstop? He screeched in outrage.
Can you do it or not?
That is not the only—
Yes or no, Skippy.
Or option 3 is you give me a better idea, like quick.
Shit.
Shit. Ugh. This is so unfair. The indicator for portside belly jet 5 began blinking an overheat warning.
Pope, let's set this thing down. Skippy, can the skids hold us on this surface if we land on the tunnel floor? We won't slide to crash against that door?
The grips on the bottom of the skids will be more than sufficient to hold the Falcon safely in place.
Great. Pope, take us down. Park us, 50 meters from the door.
Sir, Pope warned, we need to go through that doorway to turn the ship around. I can't fly back up the tunnel backwards.
Understood. I've got a plan for that.
Skippy, what will it be? Option 1, 2, or 3?
Yes, he mumbled.
I couldn't hear you real good. Was that a yes, you can be our doorstop for a while?
Yes!
Yes, I can do it. I swear, if you tell anyone about—
Sims and the entire CIC crew are monitoring our flight recorder data, Skippy, so they already know.
Sims. Colonel Sims, he raised his voice. I have not forgotten that you were the one who brought those humiliating little costumes the crew dressed my can in.
You're adorable, Skippy. Sims was clearly amused.
Oh, I hate my life.
Pope set the Falcon down and I got out, carrying the beer can.
You ready?
Ready? I am not going to do anything, you big ape. You need to carry me over there and set me down in front of that door.
I know that, buddy. I meant if there is anything you have to do to prepare your awesome trick of increasing your mass, then do it now, please. My overall mass will not change. I will only shift more of it into this space-time, and compared to my other capabilities, this trick is rather lame.
Can the Rindaloo do that?
Dude, please. Those lazy spiders have never even imagined this technology.
And this trick may be lame to you, but it is awesome to every other being in the galaxy.
I suppose so. Joe, you called me buddy. You've never done that before.
You never offered to embarrass yourself like this before. I know you hate acting as a simple doorstop, and I appreciate it.
Oh, that was nice. Maybe I shouldn't worry about.
I also will appreciate watching the flight recorder data of this incident over and over and over, and someday showing it to everyone on Earth.
Joe, I hate you so much.
I love you too, Skippy. Open that big door now, please.
Ugh!
There was a puff of dust from where the door seal separated, and what little air lay beyond the door vented outward.
The cavern is in vacuum, Skippy?
No, I'm getting details now. Beyond this door is a chamber, basically a big airlock. Then there is an inner door. Don't worry, the inner door is much lighter and its mechanism is fully functional. I've cracked the inner door open to slowly bleed off the air in the cavern.
Dust began jetting through the gap as he said that.
The Maxalts kept the cavern in partial air pressure, about half of sea level pressure on Earth. It was dry and cold to preserve the equipment. We better wait right here while the air vents.
Agreed.
What little moisture was in the cavern's air was freezing as it hit vacuum, creating a dusty fog in the tunnel. Without the enhanced synthetic vision of my flight suit's helmet, I would not have been able to see our dropship.
Pope, is the Falcon holding steady?
Affirmative, sir, he reported. I was pushing propellant through the belly jets for cooling. That's cut off now. This breeze is cooling the jets nicely.
It's nice to hear good news for a change.
When the air venting had slackened off to a zephyr, Skippy began fully retracting both doors.
This heavy, damned outer door is resisting me, Joe. The airlock does not like having both doors open at the same time.
The outer door mechanism is in worse condition than I thought. It probably will not open all the way.
Oh, crap, that's not good. Would the Falcon fit through?
Maybe not, but the Maxalt's dropships in the cavern are smaller and will fit through easily, so it will not be a problem.
It will be a problem, Beer Can.
The Falcon is blocking the tunnel and it can't fly backwards. I'm okay with leaving the Falcon here if we have to, but nothing is getting out of there unless we get the Falcon through that door and out of the way.
Oh, shit. Damn it, I should have thought of that.
It is humiliating that I need a meat sack to remind me of something so simple.
And more humiliating than acting as a doorstop? Don't push your luck, monkey boy.
I told you to stand back from the door in case something broke. Now I need you to do the opposite. Get close to the door edge and follow it. You may need to set me down in front of it very fast. When that happens, you run like hell, Joe. You need to be clear before I can do my trick.
Gotcha.
The gloves of the flight suit did not have a super-crushing kung fu grip like infantry armor did, but flight suits did have power assist, so it was easy to hold his beer can in one hand. Crouching down, I held him just in front of the door's edge as it slowly moved backwards, vibrating and jerking as it went. It pissed me off that the Maxalts couldn't have sprayed some WD-40 on the door mechanism before they abandoned the place. They're real jerks. As the door slid, I awkwardly duck-walked sideways, ready to drop Skippy in place and run.
Oh, hey, I grunted in surprise as I needed to use both hands to hold him.
You're getting heavy. The door mechanism may fail at any moment, so I'm getting ready. Set me down and slide me along. You will not be able to hold me up.
Doing as he suggested, I risked a glance back at the Falcon.
How far does the door need to open for the Falcon to fly through?
A strip of light shone on the floor of the tunnel. It made a line about 3 meters away.
That far, Joe. That is the absolute minimum, and even that will be denting the fenders as the Falcon squeezes through.
We can buff that right out. Don't worry about the Falcon.
My heart skipped a beat as the door's movement became more halting and jerky while I got on my knees and pushed Skippy along.
He was heavy,
Like, I guess he must weigh 50 pounds or more, and it seemed like he was heavier on the bottom than on top. That was smart of him. Being bottom-heavy would prevent him from tipping over, because a rolling beer can would be useless to stop the door from sliding shut. "Just 2 more feet," I announced while I stared at the line of light Skippy was projecting. "We're going to make it. By the way, I have good news and bad news. There are 3 dropships in that cavern. However, only one of them can be made flight-worthy. One is all we need." It was hard to keep the disappointment out of my voice. "Can we swap parts around to make one of the others flyable?" "No can do, Joe. We will need to strip parts from the 2 junkers just to get that one off the ground. It is an easy job and should not take long."
"I hope so."
The door slid just past the critical line and kept going. I didn't say anything from fear of tempting fate.
"This is taking way too long.
Doing the best I can.
Whoa!"
The door shuddered, ground to a halt, then resumed sliding backward. It was now a full meter past the critical mark.
That was scary.
"We'll give it another." The door's mechanism broke. Skippy did not need to order me to get out of the way. I felt the door pushing back hard, so I released him and used my flight suit's power-assisted legs to jump backward and up, nearly hitting the ceiling of the tunnel in the low gravity. The flight suit computer also assisted my clumsy landing, so I came down on my boots rather than my helmet. Skippy was growing larger. He was the size of a can of paint, then a drywall bucket before the door stopped moving. Unfortunately, the door had slid inexorably forward while he was increasing his mass, and the opening was now too narrow for the Falcon to fit through.
"I am sorry, Joe," he sighed. "I did the best I could. Damn it! This was all for nothing. This sucks."
"Colonel, he is right," Pope called. "Even if we could fly the Falcon at a steep angle rolled to one side, it won't fit through that doorway."
"Is there anything we can do, Joe? Perhaps if another dropship were to fly down here, we could use it to tow the Falcon back out of the tunnel."
"No, that won't work.
We don't have time for that anyway, Skippy." I walked to stand directly in front of the Falcon. Even with its wings fully retracted, they were too wide to fit through. Removing the wings would not solve the problem, as the wings fit into pods sticking out from the sides of the hull, where the pods also contained maser cannons.
"Pope, button up your suit and get out here. We have work to do."
"Sir?" he asked.
What work?"
"It's simple. The Falcon is too wide to fit through the door. If the ship was hungry, I'd say we grease the edges of the door and toss a Twinkie into the cavern." He chuckled at my joke. "Since it is not heavy, we need to cut away part of the hull."
Cut away?
"Unless you have a better idea." After slight hesitation, Pope responded. I could hear his seat harness being unbuckled.
"Be right there. I'll bring the cutting torches."